This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting from the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. My name is Dr. BJ Gunther, and I'm the host of the show, along with my colleague and producer, Catherine Howell. And in case you don't know, this show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, and in particular, UA students. So you can listen to us each Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM or online at wbuafm.ua.edu, or you can also download the Crimson White app and just click on the 90.7 live streaming link. So if you have any questions or ideas about the show, for the show, email those to me at brainmattersradio@wbuafm.ua.edu, and I'll consider using your show topic. We're almost booked up. I think we're completely booked up for the rest of this semester, but we need some ideas for the spring semester. We always need ideas. So if you have those, email those to us, and I'll try to remember to give out this email address throughout each after we come back from each break. Tonight's show, I just am so excited. We had this guest on last year, and it was the first time, and I don't know why I didn't think about it sooner, because Halloween is my favorite holiday and a lot of people's favorite holiday now. You know, when I was growing up, I think people looked at me like a weirdo because I loved Halloween so much, and I kind of went all out with decorating, and I wore stuff, you know, sweaters and whatnot. But now it's kind of in, I would say. I don't want to say more popular than the holiday, you know, than the Christmas holiday, but it's getting there. Our show topic tonight is the psychology of fear and why we like to be frightened. And as I mentioned, my guest has been on the show last year. I want to read a little excerpt from an article I read earlier today in researching for the show tonight. This Halloween season, if you watch a scary movie, visit a haunted house, or even play a scary video game, think about what you're feeling and what's happening to your body at that moment. Do you feel better after? Do you feel pleasure? Are you relieved that it's over? Are you satisfied with yourself, or maybe you feel closer to the person with who you experienced it with? Reflect on the experience and think about it critically. Think about why you might like getting scared. I know I do, and I can't figure it out. I think it's just, you know, I think it's just adrenaline, really. Part of it's adrenaline, knowing you're going to be safe if you go through a haunted house. Well, for the most part. My guest tonight, like I mentioned, was on the show last year, and we talked about just all different kinds of stuff. Dr. Alan Brown is a professor of English at the University of West Alabama and the author of many, many books. I've got one of his books right here. I got it for my birthday on October 1st, Dr. Brown.
Good for you.
It's really, I mean, this is your book.
Yes, that was, yeah, the other one.
I got both of these. And when I told the person that you were going to be on my show, you know, coming up, she was very excited. I was like, where did you get, these books are everywhere. Do you know where she bought this at Walgreens?
Yes, Walgreens carries them.
They are everywhere. And I try to tell everybody about them because, you know, it's not only, we talked about this last year, you haven't just written books about Alabama, the state of Alabama. You've been all over the place.
I write mostly about the South.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I'm from the North. I'm from Illinois. Mm-hmm. And people don't talk as much up there as they do down here. And I don't know if it's because they're colder, the temperature makes them colder, or if people are just warmer by nature down here. But you get a lot of ghost stories just by going to restaurants, hotels.
I'm sure it triggers people when you tell them what you research and what you've written about. All you have to do is say, I write books about ghosts, And I'm sure that just triggers people.
Well, I think it kind of puts them at their ease because they know that if I write about these things and collect them, I'm not going to make fun of them. I'm not going to ridicule them.
Yeah.
And I would never do that.
Well, and you know what? I think we talked about this last time. I think we did. About the not only the skeptics, because there are skeptics, of course,
yeah.
But the people, there are just so many entertainers, I'll say now, who are doing reality shows and mm-hmm. you know, all kinds of stuff to where you just kind of roll your eyes, and so it's yeah. hard to decipher somebody who is legitimate from somebody who is just doing it, you know, for entertainment purposes.
Yes, that is true. If you look at some of these ghost hunting shows or ghost adventures is a good one where they always find ghosts and they always get scared. And it seems almost as if being scared has become kind of a performance.
Yeah.
And I think the belief is that if the people on TV are scared, then the audience is going to be scared too.
Yeah.
And they'll kind of enjoy that vicarious feeling of being in a haunted house.
What started your interest in this kind of stuff?
Oh, it goes way back. It goes back to when I was like 12 or 13 and I used to watch old Universal monster movies on TV on Saturday afternoon, black and white monster movies. In fact, it was 2:00 in the afternoon. I still remember. It was like appointment TV for me. And as I got older, I still watch movies. I watch them now, but I started reading, and then I read the literary ghost stories, and then I got into the true ghost stories, mm-hmm. the ones that supposedly happened, like Hans Holzer. I started reading him probably back in the 60s and 70s, and then of course now, thanks to the popularity of the ghost hunting shows on TV, there are lots of books out, and I will admit I have benefited from it. Other people who write about ghosts have benefited from this deep interest in the paranormal, which I think is healthy. I don't see anything wrong with it. I think we need to be more spiritual anyway.
Yeah. One of the articles I was reading, like I mentioned earlier today, I can't remember which one. I think it might have been a Psychology Today article. And it interviewed Margie Kerr. Have you ever heard of her? Margie Kerr. She is a professor, I believe, at the University of Pittsburgh. I believe. And she's pretty infamous with the research and writing books, too, legitimately. And this time of year, people sounded like from the article, really, she's busy like you are this time of year, because this is kind of her interest area and her expertise. But she mentions in this article that, you know, some people think that, and I just said it, some people think you're weird or something, you know, if you really love Halloween like I do, because I kind of go overboard. And she said there's absolutely nothing wrong, like you said, there's nothing wrong with people who, you know, there's something wrong. And if, you know, if somebody's showing symptoms of mental health issues, that can be concerning. I know that, but it's just like sometimes it's just a personality thing. Some people like it, some people don't. Just like you like Mexican and I don't. Well, I love Mexican, but you like fish and I don't, you know, something like that.
Well, all you have to do is think back to your childhood. Think back to those jump tales that you may have heard as a kid, or sitting around a campfire and listening to a headless Indian who walks through the woods looking for his head. And then think about movies that have these jump scares in them. A good example is the first Conjuring movie. That I jumped in a couple places there. And the scare lasted a couple of seconds. Didn't last long. Then I felt good afterward. And it's hard to explain that feeling. All you have to do is go to a Spirit of Halloween store. And look at all the people there. I took my grandsons there Saturday, and it's like the third or fourth time this year they've been there. And they love going up to those romantic robotic monsters and stepping on the button.
They know, oh my gosh, something. Yes.
They know something, a spider is going to jump at them, but they do it anyway.
And
they jump and squeal a little bit, and it's fun.
Those are my people.
Those are my people. Some people outgrow it as they get older, and they think it's childish, but then there's some of us, like you and me, who think it's fun. Still fun to do.
And let me tell you, I believe I bring joy to my neighborhood. Because my house is a fun house to come to. I've had little kids that come from the neighborhood next door that know us because we dress up, we run out of the bushes, we do weird stuff, because we don't throw things at people or have limits, but because there's some people who would probably call the cops, I know what you're talking about. And one of the things in several of these research articles I read about why we like to be scared or frightened, part of it is what you mentioned is you're going to be safe. Yeah. For the most part. Like, I've been in some haunted houses. Well, I'll tell you, Sloss Furnace, a couple of years ago, I wore boots. And I'm glad I did because I ended up in water about two or three or 4 inches high. I don't know why.
Yeah.
So that was a little alarming. I don't think it was planned. But for the most part, I knew I wasn't going to drown.
Some of the information that you sent me about dopamine how it's that fear produces those.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's something to it. Also, I think adrenaline, the adrenaline rush you get from maybe thinking that you're in a dangerous situation. Now, some people actually put themselves in dangerous situations, like alleged trippers who go to abandoned hospitals, like Bryce Hospital.
Or like Waverly. You and I have both been there.
Waverly, yes. But the difference is that Waverly is, you can go, you can pay, you can take a tour. Waverly, Bryce, that kids who went there were trespassing. So you had the additional fear of getting arrested, too.
Yeah.
One of the most famous legend tripping sites is the Polk Lick Trestle in Louisville, Kentucky, which is supposedly haunted by the ghost of a circus freak called the Goat Man. And kids will climb up. They'll climb up the trestle and stand on the trestle. I was there this summer. And if a train comes, you have to jump off onto the highway.
No, that's dangerous.
It is dangerous, and people have gotten killed doing it. But I think a lot of kids do it because they're not supposed to.
Yeah.
Their parents tell them don't do it. The police tell them don't do it. But also, I think there's a sense of community that forms.
That's right.
It does. And so these teenagers that go out there to party or whatever are a special group, and they see themselves that way. We've already mentioned this, but there's that survivor feeling.
Mm-hmm.
When you survive a scary movie or survive a haunted house, that is. It's fun. It's a good feeling.
I think one of those articles, it talks about five reasons why we enjoy being scared. And one of those reasons is closeness to others. You feel like you connect with other people, like you've come out of this alive. You've come out of this haunted house together. We've all experienced it together. And it gives you a sense of belonging.
Yes, it does. It does. And you experience this on ghost tours, on ghost walks.
Yeah. Yeah, I could say that.
Mm-hmm. I've been on many of them. I have led many of them over the years. And it's like you're the only ones in that particular part of town that's doing this. That is taking this trip into the unknown.
And
you feel kind of special. You feel actually kind of close to the people around you. I've always actually kind of gotten to know people on these ghost walks, some of them. And it's very pleasurable.
Well, we're going to take a short break right now. When we come back, you brought up Bryce. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Bryce, but I want you to tell us a little more details about it. And also, maybe we'll talk a little bit more about the fight or flight mode that we all have. And like you mentioned, the neurotransmitters that are triggered when we do something frightening. So hang on, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm BJ Gunther, and we're talking tonight about the psychology of fear, why we like to be frightened. And my guest is Dr. Alan Brown. You're still at the University of West Alabama, right?
Yes,
still
I am.
Teaching English.
Yes.
How
yes.
many classes are you teaching this semester?
Oh, I've got four.
Okay. Do you teach any classes about this, like just for fun at the university?
I just started. Last year, I became a professor of English and folklore, so I taught an online course on American folk narratives, and I'm developing a course on the supernatural in literature and folklore, which will be a lot of fun.
It'll be a lot of fun, and I bet you'll have a waiting list.
Yes, I hope so.
Probably. You'll have to cut off the numbers. You mentioned Bryce. When I emailed you to invite you to be on the show, I mentioned something that's happening over in my husband. My husband also works at the university. In his building, he has had several staff members come to him separately. This legitimized it a little more for me. He hadn't told me about it until about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And he said that several staff members have come to him claiming that they're hearing a singing child on the elevator. And he actually had someone who is very, she's another assistant director, and she came to him with, and didn't know that the other people had gone to him, and said, "I'm hearing a child singing on the elevator." And this freaked everybody out, of course. Yeah. But when I heard it, I was like, "Woo, let's go up there now. Let's go now, ride the elevator."
It's scarier if someone corroborates your experience.
It is.
And didn't know that you had it. That really does.
It makes it real. I think it makes it more real, or at least you try to find out where it's coming from. You know, like, is this real? You know, there's got to be a reason this is happening. I mean, haven't you found that's true with the people you've interviewed for your books, that you try to find out why the reason is that it's happening? And then when you can't, that's when it gets really scary.
Yes. That's when the goosebumps rise on your arm. When you've eliminated all the rational explanations, and what you're left with is the maybe irrational or paranormal, however you want to view it. I really wish I had gone to Bryce. At least part of me wishes I had gone, but it was before they started renovating, restoring it. Of course, it was illegal to do that.
Yeah.
But for many years, I had students who would go there and tell me about all their adventures, and I could tell that they were they weren't drunk or crazy. At least not when they talked to me, they weren't.
Yeah. Did you think the stories that they told you did some of them sound legitimate?
Yes, especially from kids who didn't know each other.
Yeah,
they had the same experiences, like hearing the intercom echoing through the building. Well, there was no electricity in the building at the time.
No.
Or having debris thrown at them, rocks or pieces of concrete thrown at them. I was one kid who said that he came out of it with scratches on his back. He was wearing a T-shirt at the time, and it looked like finger marks on his back. There's a supposedly a little boy who was he was put immersed in cold water as a shock treatment, I guess, and he ended up dying. And he is seen. He wears bib overalls, and he's like 9 or 10. Kind of a sad little ghost. Scary. But yeah, there is a little girl ghost that hangs around as well. And the thing is about stories like that is that they are part of a community's history.
Yeah.
A lot of historians dismiss the folklore, but they shouldn't. They shouldn't. Because I think folklore and legends, I think they supplement the historical record and complement it as well. I hope these stories just continue to be told, even though Bryce probably isn't as haunted as it was. Although it's interesting that
I don't know. After the season calms down a little bit, I'll try to connect you with my husband, and maybe you could, you know, go over there and see what you think. It never happens, though. It would probably never happen for you because, you know.
Yeah. If I brought my wife with me, they might. Because I think she's a sensitive. And she doesn't want to be. She's a former math teacher, very rational minded. I'm the one that's, you know, imaginative. And
yeah, you're wanting to hear it and see it.
I don't. I have had a couple of chances, but not many. But Marilyn is the one. She's the one that will take pictures in a room in a hotel, and she'll get the orbs. And I don't, as a rule.
Has that happened since I met with you last year? Have you had any more experiences?
Oh, let me think.
You went to the bridge in Louisville, you said, but has she gone with you?
Yes, I did go there. Yeah, I didn't have anything happen there.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to the pandemic, my trips have been curtailed.
I'm sure.
Somewhat.
One of the articles, I keep referencing the several articles because they were so specific in giving good information about what we're talking about, why we like to be frightened. And one of them said that our bodies are primed for danger. I mentioned the fight or flight response that we've all learned in sixth grade biology, most of them. But one of them said we achieve a weird kind of high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that comes from those neurotransmitters being released. And it also talked about there are certain people who, I don't know how to explain it, they lack this more than others. And so they seek this out more than others, I guess. It wasn't like depression or anything like that where you lack, you know, certain neurotransmitters, but it was almost like you're made like this, you know.
Yeah, one of the sources I looked at said that drugs like cocaine tend to increase the production of some of those neurotransmitters like dopamine, and that's why they use them. I don't know. I think there might be something to that some of these scary situations do make you feel good after you survive them. I think there's something to it, but I also think that some people just can't help it. It happens to them. They don't want it to happen. I just spoke, in fact, about an hour ago, a lady in Livingston called me up. She lives in a house that was built in 1840. I have talked to every person who has owned that house since the 1970s. I've talked to four different people. They've all described the ghost. They all describe it the same way. This is an older lady who's very, she was almost crying when I talked to her. And I think in her case, the first time she actually saw the ghost, she went into the kitchen and to get something from the refrigerator, and it just appeared. It's a big, white, amorphous shape. And she said it stood like 18 inches away from her, and she screamed. And it was unexpected. It's that startle response, I guess, kicked in.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said it vanished. And so I tried to give her the standard explanation. So this is probably residual haunting. I think it might be a poltergeist because it tends to play with the electronics. And it always happens when she's by herself. Her husband goes to Lake Martin at the cabin on the weekend.
Wow.
And she was just... You just don't know what to tell people like that.
No, and you wonder, like, why, you know, if it is true, if it's really happening, why is it happening when nobody's around to, like, for, I feel sorry for her because there's nobody around to prove it, you know, to prove what she saw. Is a poltergeist, what is a poltergeist?
Oh, it's a, some people say it's a playful spirit. It's a mischievous spirit.
I saw the movie. It didn't look playful. It looked evil.
No. The movie bears no relation to the poltergeist. There are some people, and this is a recent theory, is that poltergeist activity is produced by adolescents who are undergoing some kind of hormonal changes, which triggered telekinesis, and so that they're the ones that make the objects move or fall off the table. And that's fairly recent. That theory's been out there for about 20 years or so. Some people think the Bell Witch was produced actually by the daughter, who was not aware that she had those powers.
And the Bell Witch is famous. And the Bell Witch, what city?
Adams, Tennessee.
Yeah, it's a southern town. I knew it was in Tennessee. What's so famous about the Bell Witch?
Oh, I think it's just the story itself that John Bell was tormented by this spirit, and no one knows why. There are all kinds of explanations for it, but she eventually poisoned him. But she liked his daughter, and so followed her daughter around until her daughter got married to a man the witch's name was Kate Bass, by the way, and she didn't like this man and continued to torment her after she moved to Mississippi. It's a long story. It's got Andrew Jackson in it.
Oh my gosh.
Bell property, and brought a witch finder with him, and the story goes that the witch finder was driven away by the Bell Witch.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's part of Americana. It is America's ghost story.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew it was famous, and I probably read it a long time ago because I'm interested in that kind of stuff, but I just forgot about it. Mm-hmm. Are there still sightings now, or is that over and over?
John Bell's cabin is long gone, but the Bellwitch Cave is there.
Okay.
The man who owns it, and you can buy tickets and go through it. I'm going to do that sometime.
That sounds fun. I might have to do that myself. Let's take another break, and when we got back, we've got several email questions, okay? You ready to take some of those?
Okay,
so
good.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and we're talking tonight in preparation for the Halloween season, which is upon us, about the psychology of fear, why we like to be frightened. And, you know, I like to be frightened when I know I'm going to be okay. But I will say, I was thinking about this earlier because I was thinking about some questions that I was going to ask you kind of impromptu. And one of those, what is this? I know for me, the scariest film, the scariest movie I've ever seen is called Communion. And for it to be scary and me not watch it again, I will never watch that movie again. It's about alien abduction, and it's with Christopher Walken, who is creepy anyway.
Yeah.
But that's it for me. Some people will say The Shining. I can take that. Some people will say just simple stuff. I've had somebody tell me The Wizard of Oz. You know?
Yeah, flying monkeys scare on kids.
Yeah. So it does depend on, I guess, your tolerance level and your personality and maybe traumas that you've had in the past as children. You know, it could be a lot of different papers. What is the scariest movie you've ever seen?
Most people from my generation will say The Exorcist.
Ugh.
But I think Psycho is.
Psycho. And Psycho.
I love Psycho because the humor is, the horror is subtle. It's not in your face.
The horror is subtle. You're right.
It creeps up on you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's particularly scary because we all think we've been to hotels like a Beach Hotel, and we've known creepy little guys like Norman Bates.
It seems so normal, wink, wink, in art. I mean, you're right. And Psycho will always go down in history. I mean, some of these newer haunted, scary movies, they're just too sensational for me, a lot of them. You know, they're just, I hate to say it, too ridiculous. Like the ones that are more ridiculous, I just find that kind of comical. It's the ones that could be real that are the scariest.
There was a film that came out a couple of years ago called Hereditary.
Never saw it.
Oh, it is. It leaves you with an unpleasant feeling at the end.
Oof.
And I don't like movies.
Well, now I've got to go Netflix it tonight.
You won't feel good.
Let's take a few email questions, okay?
Yeah, but it's well done. It's very well done.
Oh, here's an email question from a listener. Does experiencing a frightful event result in endorphins being released into the brain? We've already kind of touched on that.
Yes. Yeah, it does. I think it also, though, depends, and I think I've already mentioned this, in some people it increases adrenaline, and that can actually lead to people getting hurt. I've always told people that ghosts don't hurt people. People hurt people.
Yeah, yeah.
That they hurt themselves trying to get away from the ghost, and so they trip over a chair or they fall down the stairs, and I think that's adrenaline related. That they have to move. They have to get away and endanger themselves.
Another question here that somebody sent in. Is fear a primitive survival response that helped our early ancestors to survive dangerous situations or environments?
I think that is that's a theory that some researchers have come up with. It's a theory that, this is almost instinctive in people, this fear of snakes and spiders and fear of heights, fear of water, that our ancestors passed this down to us genetically. Now, there are some fears that are learned. And these would, we learn a lot of these from our parents. So if we witness our parents screaming when a mouse skitters across the floor or a snake is in the driveway, we're going to feel the same way. Those are fears that we can't help. They're part of us. And I think some people end up being embarrassed when they act that way, especially people who have phobias, like a phobia of a cat, and they scream when a cat walks in the room and everyone else is saying, what's wrong with him?
I know.
You know, it's, so you have fear, you have anger, you have embarrassment, shame, maybe in some cases, with those innate fears.
We're planning, Catherine's already been to several haunted houses this season. I'm planning on going to the one here in Tuscaloosa, I think Thursday night. It's called The Horror, and I'm just thrilled that we finally have a haunted house back here in Tuscaloosa, because we used to have the Savage House. Do you remember the Savage House out in Gordo?
I do not.
The Savage House was one of my favorites, and I've been, you know, I've lost earrings, and a lot of things have happened to me at some of the ones in Birmingham when I was growing up. But this one was one of the first ones I've ever been to, and this was 20 years ago, where you'd have to get on, you know, a hayride and go through the woods, and then you come to this little shack. It's just like what you imagine. And there'd be an old car out in front of it, and, of course, there'd be somebody hiding out in the car that would jump out and scare you to half to death. But just the thrill of it lasting that long, going through the woods, it's just what you imagine in your head, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I tell people I'm going to haunted houses, that I immediately get responses like, oh, why would you want to do that? You know, that they don't understand. But then I have some people, thank goodness for Catherine, who get it. They get it. You know, it's just a thrill. It's not real, people.
Yeah, you legitimize it.
Yeah.
By being a professor who really enjoys this season and haunted houses and things.
Exactly. What kind of people, what do you think are personality traits of people who are fear lovers? I'll say it that way.
Oh, well, I think, I don't know that you can really do a character profile on the typical person who loves to be scared, because I think a lot of us do. I'm just pulling this out of my hat, but I'm thinking that probably at least half of the population really enjoys it. If that weren't true, Halloween wouldn't be that big of a commercial holiday.
That's right. That popular.
Second only to Christmas. And look at all the horror movies that are cranked out all the time, year after year after year. People enjoy it. I think, I guess maybe if you want to characterize those people, I should say us, because I'm one of those people. Those are people who are open-minded to the possibility that things might exist. Yeah. After all, you can't prove that ghosts don't exist, right?
I mean, people see what they see. People hear what they hear. You know, so what do you know, unless they are diagnosed with a psychotic disorder or something, you know, like a mental health issue, what are you going to do? Argue with somebody who is, you know, highly intelligent and see, you know, has seen or heard something?
See, most of the people I've interviewed, and I've interviewed hundreds of people who've had sightings, and an extremely small percentage of those were, as I said, drunk or crazy. And a lot of them were educated, college-educated people, professionals who aren't supposed to be given to flights of fancy, but they can't help it. These things happen to them. They happen. They can't explain them. And they're looking for somebody that they can tell them to share this experience with.
And probably hoping that who they're talking to has seen something too. Because then, like we were talking about, that kind of legitimizes it for them. You know, like, I'm not the only one.
Oh, yes. That's certainly part of it. And I think that's one reason why these televised ghost hunting shows are so popular too, because
definitely
I'm part of a bigger group.
What do you think about here we are, you know, in the South is mostly pretty religious.
Yeah.
And I know you've probably had people ask you or say to you, you know, how can somebody who's a Christian believe in this? And how do people who are Christians, I'm a Christian, and, you know, I love Halloween. That doesn't mean anything to me. I know most of it's not real, but what do you say to people who question if you're, you know, how can you enjoy this and still be a Christian? Because I know you've talked about that with people.
Yeah. Well, I'm a Methodist. And in fact, I'm participating in Trunk or Treat Sunday afternoon. My wife and I are. We do it every year. We love it. I think that the best way to explain it is that there is a spiritual dimension to life. Whether or not you believe that an average person can become a ghost or not, there is a spiritual dimension. If you're a Christian, you have to believe in that. You have to believe in the Holy Ghost, the Holy Spirit. And those words are bandied around all the time in churches.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that we are being non-Christian or blasphemous by enjoying this season of the year and by getting scared for the fun of it. Now, I also, being an English professor, I like the stories.
Yes.
I don't care if they're true or not.
Yes, that's why I love your book. And I mean, how many books have you written?
I'm thinking 37.
My, are you writing one now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm writing Georgia Legends and Lore. Kentucky Legends and Lore is coming out the 25th of October. And in September, my children's book came out, and it's The Ghostly Tales of the Haunted South. And my publisher, the Arcadia Press, asked me to take one of my adult books and rewrite it for children. And I said, sure. Well, that, let me tell you, writing a kid's book is not easy.
I don't know how you did that, because you got to probably be careful. You know, you got to be careful and say it in their language, I suppose. And I would think, are you being asked now to come and talk to children's groups or schools even?
Actually, I'm going to let's see if I've got that date right. On the 22nd, I'm going to Holy Spirit Catholic Church in Tuscaloosa.
And that's good to hear.
Talking to three classes of students.
How old are they, middle school or elementary?
I think they're fifth graders.
Wow.
I think.
They will love it.
I've done it before, but I talked about my adult books. Now I've got a children's book. And it's kids friendly. I had to cut all of the, well, I never have profanity, not much profanity, unless it's quoted.
Yeah, quote yeah.
But I had to cut all the bordellos out.
Mr. Brown, what is a bordello?
We can't have that.
No, definitely. That you mentioned the two books you're working, the Kentucky book and then the Georgia book you're working on now, Legends and Lores. I take it that is more about folklore than just ghosts and hauntings.
Yes, except that I always had the same chapters in all my, same chapter titles in all of my Legends and Lore books. And the one on legendary locations, they're almost all ghosts, almost all hauntings.
Amazing. Yeah. This is amazing. I'm looking right now at your book that I have called Eerie Alabama.
Yes.
Just the title alone, you know, got me. But this was given to me for my birthday. The Covered Bridge at the University of West Alabama. Tell us about the Covered Bridge. I don't know about it.
Yeah. Well, there was a man, a scoundrel, who was known as the Outlaw Sheriff of Sumter County. His name was Steve Renfro. He came to Sumter County in 1868. He immediately joined the Ku Klux Klan. His wife was had connections with it, and he was eventually accused of the murder of a Republican judge, threw him in jail, and while he was awaiting trial, and then he was acquitted of the crime, and they elected him sheriff. And he, I'll make this short, but he ended up embezzling public funds, and so he escaped. He actually escaped two or three times, and finally they caught up with him in Enterprise, Mississippi, and on July 13, 1886, they lynched him down in front of the Suconaki River in Sumter County. Well, he was in the habit of crossing this bridge on his mule, this covered bridge to cross the Suconaki River. Well, they moved it to Livingston in the 1970s, and people have said that they have been touched, and it's usually young ladies, young women. He was a ladies' man, and they have been touched while crossing it. And some have seen his dark figure with his big wide-brimmed hat and big black boots.
Ooh.
They've seen him around. Yeah, he's.
And this is on the. Is this bridge on the campus of West Alabama?
Yeah.
Wow! Yeah, wouldn't cross that bridge.
Well, there are older members of the community who will not walk across that bridge.
Mm-mm, I wouldn't either.
No. Well, he did kill. He killed two black men on the bridge in 18 on a bridge in 1873 it was, but uh-huh. It was an iron bridge, an old iron bridge that has since fallen into the river. But that story has been transferred from that bridge to this bridge, and sometimes that happens to legends.
Yeah,
when a haunted site is gone, it just, you know, it just moves somewhere else. What happened here?
Have you ever been to Lake Havasu?
Have not.
Do you know what's at Lake Havasu?
I should know. I heard it. What? Tell me what.
The bridge from London that Jack the Ripper was last seen on was moved from London to Lake Havasu. And of course I had to go see it.
Yes, I have heard that. Yes. So did you have any creepy feelings?
No, it was in the daytime. It was beyond hot. It was hotter than the surface of the sun. And literally, you could not stay outside, really, for longer than just a few minutes. It was like 112 degrees. And, you know, I think it gets hot here, but that was dangerous. And so it was in the daytime, but I was looking.
Were you disappointed?
A little. But yeah. I don't think I would have the courage to go back at night.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a chicken like that, you know. But.
That's the thing about the night, about darkness. I think darkness tends to bring out the fear in people. It's the fear of the unknown. It's a very primal fear.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Very primal fear.
Do you listen to podcasts?
I do.
Do you have any suggestions for any good scary podcast?
Well, I like Lore. That's the one I listen to regularly.
Yes, I've listened to Lore.
And I like it because they do what in that podcast what I do in my books, which is to lay the historical framework for the story. And then they work in the paranormal stuff, but that makes it, that adds a kind of veracity to these weird, unexplainable events. I'm always in the car at night when I'm listening to it.
Mm-hmm. Do you get ideas from some of that podcast for your writings?
I have. Well, I've gotten ideas about different types of American hauntings, like American vampires, the real ones, the ones that are supposedly involved either people who were thought to be vampires, but they actually had tuberculosis. I'm trying to think of that. Mercy, I can't think of her last name. A young girl who's accused of being a vampire. And then they're like the vampire cult in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
70s, I think. That's fascinating.
That is very fascinating. I mentioned Margie Kerr, the sociologist, in one of the articles. She mentioned a podcast, and I actually started listening to it this morning. I think it's going to be a good one, called The Black Tapes.
The Black Tapes?
The Black Tapes, plural, T-A-P-E-S.
T-A-P-E-S?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that might be one that you might be interested in, but because I know probably most of our listeners are into podcasts, you know, and it's easy. They're easy to listen to when you're exercising or driving in a car or walking across campus. So, you know, what all have you got coming up for until Halloween?
Well, let's see. On the 25th and 27th, I have ghost walks of the campus of University of West Alabama.
Okay.
The 26th is the city ghost walk.
In Livingston.
And then the 28th, I'm giving a book signing at the Dog Street Cafe in Livingston. But this coming Saturday, on the 23rd, I've got a book signing at Books a Million in Meridian. And
is that for your book you mentioned?
That's a children's book, yeah.
The children's book, okay. Books a Million in Meridian.
Let me look at the calendar.
And you've got ghost tour. You said ghost walks two nights at the University of Livingston. Are they already booked? University of West Alabama. Sorry, I always say Livingston.
The one on the 25th is probably booked up. I think the 26th and 27th might still be open. Anyone who's interested in going on those should contact Jason Gardner at the University of West Alabama, and he will and inquire and see if any tickets are still available.
How long are they?
Pardon?
How long are the walks?
Oh, it just depends on how fast people walk. I can do one in an hour and 15 minutes.
Wow.
I could probably do it faster than that if people would walk faster. But when you've got like 50 people walking together,
there's going to be some draggers.
sure.
Well, I appreciate you being on the show because I know you're extremely busy. I didn't know about your children's book. That's exciting for you. That's exciting for a lot of the kids, too. They'll just be fascinated, I'm sure.
My grandsons are thrilled because they've been after me to do it for a long time and finally got the chance.
Are you getting any publicity from the news media, from newspapers or websites or local TV stations, Channel 23?
This afternoon I got an email from a television station in Nashville that wanted to talk to me about their ghost book, but they wanted to do it on the days of my ghost walks. And so we're going to have to, zoom it and record it sometime.
Okay. That's exciting. It's hard to keep up. You need an agent. Where's your wife? She's got to be your agent.
Well, let me end with this. Robert Frost wrote a poem called After Apple Picking. And in the poem, he says, I'm overtired of the great harvest I myself desired. And that's how I feel at the end of October.
It's a good feeling.
I just get so worn out by the 31st.
And that's why I'm so appreciative of you being on the show. This is just a treat. This is fun. And
is
I
fun
think we need more fun, you know?
It is fun to talking to someone like me. Who loves the same weird, crazy stuff.
I mean, your stories are fascinating. You've done so much research and been so many places and seen so much. So it's fascinating. Thank you again. I really appreciate it. Go and take a break because I know you got a lot coming up.
Okay.
Take care. I'm going to make some announcements.
All right. Bye-bye.
Don't forget, our shows are recorded and podcasted on the Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and voices.ua.edu. Just type in Brain Matters and you'll find some of our past shows. There's also a link to voices.ua.edu on the Counseling Center's website at counseling.ua.edu. I always like to thank the people who've made the show possible tonight. Dr. Greg Vanderwall, he's our executive director here at the Counseling Center. Terry Seegers from the Office of Student Media. Noah, who edits our shows. I'm so appreciative for Noah. And my production assistant, Catherine Howell. She's also my colleague here at the Counseling Center. And the WVUA staff, I mentioned Noah. And my guest tonight, Dr. Alan Brown. So next week, we're going to have, it's kind of, I guess maybe you'd say the opposite of this show, maybe not, how laughter and humor benefit mental health. So join us next week. We'll be here. You be here. Thanks for listening. Good night.
This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you're in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, please contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.